Greetings, friends. Bricky here with another episode of Adventures in Design. Today, our good friend Connie Collinsworth is returning. Last time she was on, we talked all about the documentary that focused on Woodstock 1999. There was a second part of that conversation that we just didn't have time for. Today, we found that time. And if your circle of trust and you're looking at the file you just downloaded, we found a lot of time to talk this all the way through. But before we get started with today's episode and bring Connie on, I wanted to let everybody know that's in the circle of trust that Wednesday, tomorrow, which will be the 15th, you can join me at 10 a.m. to record WYFP, our return episode, bringing everybody back together, talking through the topics. It will be recording tomorrow at 10 a.m. on the West Coast. And so that the show plays out good for everybody, I'm going to ask that everybody shows up at the beginning of the recording time. Then I'm locking down the Zoom. I just had folks showing up midway through being like, what are we talking about? And although I understand they wanted to know what we're talking about, I need to make sure that everybody listening gets to hear the topics without me starting over and whenever somebody decides to walk in. So it's playing to a lot of folks, not just one. And if nobody shows up, don't worry. I can go in and do it all by myself. That's this Wednesday at 10 a.m. PST. If you're a member of the Circle of Trust, I'd love to have you in the Zoom conversation to talk about the topics at hand or to bring your own topic. What do you say we get started with Connie Collinsworth on AID 1430? Connie, how you doing, friend?
I'm doing not as good as last time we talked, but I'm doing all right.
A couple little career bumps in the road?
Yeah, that nasty pandemic has kind of put a halt to a lot of my artist touring plans, and I don't want to go into it because it's just a mess, and I don't want to talk about the Patriots, but either in football or in America. So, although we did beat them this week, we beat them, barely, and probably it was their own fault. But yeah, everything's going good. I'll take this free time and I'll pivot and make the best use of it.
How great was it to have football back yesterday?
Man, I was looking forward to it. I got up, I started watching the first game, and then I was like, I gotta make a pot of chili. I gotta have some chili. So I watched Bills and Steelers, and it seemed to be going, you know, Bill's way. And I was like, ugh, as usual. So lately. So I was like, I'm gonna go to the store and get stuff to make chili. Left, got my chili goods, got back in the car, get back in the car. The Steelers are leading and the game's almost over. And I was like, this is becoming my day. I hate the Steelers, but not as much as I hate the Bills.
Oh, because to explain this to everybody, somehow out of all the teams in the NFL, out of 32 choices, Connie picked the Miami Dolphins. Dare I say, one of the worst design costumes. But I thought about this the other day, Connie. I was thinking about it. Like, how did little baby Connie fall in love with the Dolphins? And during the time when you would have fallen in love with them in the 70s, the silk jacket was like one of the coolest things that you could wear. And that at the time, that orange and teal silk jacket was badass. And I'm going to take this away from football and go over to pop culture for a second. I loved Different Strokes as a kid. I loved it so much. Two black kids whose mom dies, who was the maid, the rich white guy that had a penthouse in Park Avenue, says to her on her deathbed, I will adopt your son, Arnold and Willis. Takes him up to a penthouse. Like, I love that whole story. I fell in love with it. But my favorite episode, aside from when Dudley ends up in the back of the bike shop, was when, do you remember when Willis was rolling with the Black Widows? And to get into that gang, they gave him a red silk jacket with an embroidered Black Widow on the back. And in my mind, that is still one of the coolest items I've ever seen.
Well, you know, the Dolphins of 90s up are not the look of the Dolphins is not the look of the Dolphins from when I was a kid. You know, the Sears catalog Dolphins. You know, the Sears catalog got every team's wares in there for young people.
I loved
looking at that. We had those awesome little leather with the plastic handle gym bags.
Yep.
I don't have mine, but Stacy got me one to replace mine that went astray somewhere when I left home. I just rolled into the living room. My dad watched sports. He mostly liked boxing and basketball, but he also would have football on. So in the mid to late 70s, little Connie strolls into the living room, sits down on the shag carpet in front of the big Sylvania set, and there's a ball game on, and it's the Dolphins and the Bills.
Oh.
And yeah. And I just sat and watched it, and then I kind of noticed that, because we lived close to Evansville, Indiana, which is where Bob Greasy was from. Mm-hmm. So they would play highlights of the Dolphins games on all the news there and keep up with the Dolphins. Plus, those afternoon games, those 3 o'clock, 3:25 games would get broadcasts a lot. And, you know, at that time it was the Raiders and the Dolphins and like the Oilers and Chiefs, and those teams, those classic, you know, AFC teams would be in those games. And it was just something about watching them, you know, like in the Oakland Coliseum, the sun and the dirt and the, you know, they still had the baseball thing going on. It was such a California version of that stuff. And I saw the Dolphins play a lot in that. And I just, I don't know, like, why does anybody wander into anything? You know, I didn't pick them. They picked me, I think. And my mom, you God bless her, indulged every one of my things that I was interested in. So every Christmas and whatever holiday, birthday, whatever, I would get stuff Dolphins from the Sears catalog. I had the puffy vest.
Oh, yeah.
I had the beanie hat with the palm. I had that little bag. I had the replica little kid jersey with the you know, the sleeve stripes up the top.
Yeah, Greasy,
you know. I loved Larry Zonka. He was my favorite player. He still is of all time. I don't know. I just, you know, I'm just one of those people. I don't quit something. So I just
love that.
It's always been that way. And then, you know, it was, they were always on Monday Night Football. And then there was the stuff with like Marino coming along. And then there's the, you know, they beat the Bears that year on Monday Night Football to save the unbeaten and all that stuff. You know, I don't know. And I guess maybe it's that outsider thing too, is they aren't popular. And so I get a thing about, you know, a little thing in me about this is my team and I've been with them good or bad. And, you know, every year I'm cautiously optimistic.
Well, there's those core 70s teams. If you were big in the 70s, you're big forever, like the Cowboys, the Steelers, because they had that national syndication. They got all the key games. They had the key players. And, you know, it's hard to love a sports team, regardless if it's football or soccer, whatever you're into. It's hard to love. It used to be really hard to love a sports team that wasn't in your market. You didn't have the internet to see all of their games. You know, like if you were a Bills fan that, you know, had to move out to California for work, you would maybe be able to see one game a year if they got into a primetime spot. You'd get to see them if they made the playoffs. But other than that, you're digging through Sports Illustrated or the newspaper to figure out what's going on with your team. So those 70s teams were really, really big and still are because of all of that, like those core teams. But man, football back in the air. This past week was the kickoff of the Halloween season over at Disneyland. And I have to tell you, I had one of those moments, one of those. I had two good cries this week. Yesterday, CBS Sports hit me up with the story of September 12th, which was the day that America came back together, narrated by the great Steve Buscemi, who I've been seeing a lot as I've been going to The Sopranos to get ready for the big movie drop at the end of this month. So the September 12th, how America came together, how we rallied together after 9/11, that got me a real good cry going. But then when they had this young lady sing the national anthem who lost her dad on that day, photo of her and her dad, and she's maybe 3 or 4 in the photo, and now she's, you know, a 24, 23-year-old young lady singing this in front of the building where her old man passed away. That gave me a good cry. But on Thursday, I saw kids in Halloween costumes for the first time. And I heard a mom talk to one of the cast members. She goes, they are so excited for this. Last year would have been their first year of trick-or-treating, and they didn't get to do it because of COVID. So I promised them that we would get them out as soon as we could, and we would do it at Disneyland. And this is a family that when I gave them a once-over after hearing this, like passing by, didn't look like they had the means to just drop this money. And the smiles on these two kids' face to get to trick or treat for the first time after being put on the bench last year, it just gave me one of those feelings of like, oh man, I'm an emotional wreck this holiday season just because it's redemption holiday from getting none last year.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this holiday season, and I don't look forward as, you know, for 20 years, I have not looked forward to holiday season. My mom passed away right before Thanksgiving, and after that, it always kind of put a damper on everything for me. Sure. You know, sometimes I try to act like I'm super into it, but I'm really not. Sorry. So then last year, having everything go on. It was really tough. So I've been looking forward to it this year.
Yeah. Well, I hope that you find a great holiday. And I understand, like, I have very, very troubled memories of my mother and divorce during the holiday season. And I have to say, it took me years of hating the holidays and hating Christmas and all that stuff, because all it was bad memories until, I don't know what it was, Connie. I think it was the Beth Loves Christmas music. And I had hated Christmas music for 2 decades. But then with her, I was forced to listen to it. And I somehow found my way into being obsessed with the holidays, even though forever it was nothing but bad memories. I'll give you a bad Christmas story to cheer you up.
All right.
My estranged mom shows up randomly, takes me to her family's Christmas, right? So see all my cousins that I haven't probably seen in maybe 2.5 years or whatever. Like, my mom would just kind of like show up and then disappear. So I'm watching all of my cousins open up all of these G.I. Joe toys that I would have loved to have, like the cool F-14, F-16, like fighter plane, and all these rad toys that I would have loved to have. But I didn't get to do that because they're like, oh, Mark Jr. should open his gift first, which was a Polaroid camera, so that I could take photos of the other kids opening the toys that I wanted to get. And one day as an adult, I put it together, Connie. They fucking forgot about me. They didn't know that my fucking weird mom was going to show up randomly. So they just took a gift from under the tree for one of the adults, slid it over to me, worked up this storyline that was highly offensive.
Man, someday you got to string all these little Mark stories together into some sort of, I don't know what it would be. I don't think it's self-help.
It's self-help. I don't know what it is. Self-hell is what it should be called. Self-hell with Mark Brickley. Yeah.
So sorry to get upset about it, but they tell you things get easier and they don't get easier. And then you get hit with the pandemic, which I think brought a lot of shit out for everybody.
Oh, of
in
course.
In regards to everything you've ever lived in your life that you lived through. But, you know, I was feeling hopeful. I'm feeling hopeful about, I mean, I know we're in a really bad time again right now, but I don't know. You got to find hope in something. And so I'm happy about spooky season being back, because on my Animal Crossing game, I'm creating a full autumn Halloween island. And then I just decided, like, I think I'm just going to keep it that way all year round. I may dip in some Christmas to it. But yeah, that's the thing, is I'm hardcore into my Animal Crossing again. Like, we it saved us a little bit during pandemic,
of course.
First round.
Yeah.
And, you know, we got into it and it was ridiculous. Like, Stacey and I would both be sitting in the same room, yet we would go visit our islands and sit there and talk to each other about, take pictures of ourselves.
You got enough
on
sticks?
Our islands.
You need more sticks?
Yeah. Yeah, you got enough wood? Will you make this for me? Do you have this recipe? All that bullshit. And we put it down, you know, for the spring. And then we both got back on a few weeks ago. And like, our islanders are like, hey, haven't seen you in about 6 months. Where you been? My house is full of cockroaches. Hey. But, you know, I'm definitely looking forward to you and your Christmas movie watch, too, because I look forward to that. I love Christmas movies as well. And I like both of us finding like new classics.
Yeah. And last year there was a new classic that I found that got added to the rotation, which I'm excited to see again. I'm going to say this, and I hope you take it the right way. This is intended to cheer you up. Just look at it this way. your parents didn't live long enough to become like anti-maskers and drive you insane. So you maybe dodged a bullet in that direction.
No, my mom would have been like masked from head to toe.
And what about your old man though?
He would just never leave the house, which is fine with me. That's where I get that from. So,
all right, let's jump into a conversation that we decided to not get into on our last episode together. And I would advise anybody who's just diving into this, go back and check out AID 1420. It's about Woodstock 99. There's a documentary over on HBO that both of us would highly recommend for you to watch. We're going to give you a heads up, though. It is triggering. I mean, it is a fascinating documentary, and it's an interesting moment in time and pop culture, but it is definitely triggering. It's very frustrating, and anybody who's ever been a victim of sexual assault, sexual abuse, it will definitely rub you the wrong way and get you fired up. So what a great movie recommendation to give people out of the gate. But when Connie suggested that I should watch this, and I watched it, we immediately knew that we needed to record an episode about it. Then Connie threw this other little thing in my lap, which there's no way we could have fit this all into one show, and we were naive to think that we could with the way that we like to go on and on. But you listen to Armchair Expert with Dax Shepard. You're a regular listener of that podcast, right?
Yeah, I believe I've listened to every episode, maybe except for a few. I look forward to it daily. It's a problematic podcast for me in some ways, but at the same time, it's highly entertaining. I like the people. I like what they're doing. They sit and chat about things the way that you and I sit and chat about things.
Oh, that's cool.
They do have celebrity guests, and we don't have one of those, but I would love to do a three-way celebrity guest thing with you sometime. So.
Well, if we can find a celebrity, let's do it. But you sent this over to me. And this is the only time I've ever listened to the show. I'm not a listener. In fact, you had to inform me that his name is Dax. Because at first, what was I calling him? Dak?
Dak.
I was like, fuck, what kind of name is Dak anyways? And you're like, well, first off, it's Dax, not Dak.
Yeah, you spelled it D-A-C, which I don't even know where you got Dak out of that.
Hey, I'm the kid that had to take the photos of all the other kids with the toys I wanted. Of course I got a learning disability. What do you expect from me? So this is an episode. It's titled Kristen Bell Returns, I think. I'm not really sure.
Yeah, Dax is married to Kristen Bell. Now, first off, let me tell you the problematic part.
Yeah, you set this up.
I'm going to jump into this one real quick. It's called Armchair Expert. And Dax is kind of the face of this podcast, but Monica Padman, who is the co-host, actually, I believe the podcast was her baby, her thing she invented, she created, she came up with for the two of them to do this podcast together. And as happens in our society over and over, it has been overtaken. And I don't think it's a conscious thing by him at all. This is not a knock. It's been, you know, if there's a man and a woman that do something together, it's the man's thing.
Mm.
You and I know this from our poster history, our design history. I know it from now my musical things.
Right.
I've fought this in every creative thing that I have done where it's the man's thing and I'm just there to help.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what goes on with that podcast. And I hate it because Monica is an integral part of the podcast. And I love her opinions, her outlook on things. And sometimes they're looked over and sometimes they're overrun.
You but, say this.
Yes. You I say do this, like the though. Podcast.
Hold on. You say this. But who do you hate on the Howard Stern show the most?
Robin. Robin Quivers, man. So the same way that I talk to my radio to Robin, I sometimes talk to Dax that way. And Stacey will be like, you know, Robin can't hear you, right? And I'm like, I don't care. I got to say it. I got to do it.
I was just so naive and in love with the Stern show that I never really noticed. I hadn't really paid attention to Robin's tick of can never be wrong. And then you pointed it out to me one day, and I've cursed you ever since, because now it's like they'll be like, have you seen this thing? And she'll be like, yeah, I've seen it. And then you can tell that she hasn't seen it, but she's not going to go back and admit that she hasn't not seen it. It's insane.
Her other tick is any topic that comes up that Howard starts a conversation is about to say something. She says, I was talking with a friend about this the other day.
Oh, God, stop.
Wait till you hear that. Every show, Mark.
God, okay, damn
we're getting on to something that I can also talk about for an hour. Robin Quivers.
So should I just go ahead and play and we'll discover this?
Yeah, I just we knew we were going to do the Woodstock 99, and then this happened to fall into my lap, this podcast, where they started discussing that they had been having private conversations about the documentary and what happened and what we saw it there.
And Dax drops a bombshell of an idea on everybody that was like, what? Are you insane? So let's jump in. We're going to play their podcast and respond on ours. It's Mark Bricky and Connie Collinsworth on AID. Hey friends, today's episode is brought to you by our friends over at GarmCompany.com. I hope you have checked out Colorama, that not only comes with 100 color palettes to make color decision easier and effortless for you, but also some interviewed conversations with our friends over at Morning Breath and our good bud Kendrick Kidd. Check it out today over at GarmCompany.com. Site-wide, coupon code AID at checkout.
But what's great, and this seemed like a directionless conversation, but as I sit in the middle of it, it occurs to me, guys, this is our life right here. It's Monica and Kristen with a female perspective, and it's Dan with a male perspective, and this is 80% of our debates right here. Mm-hmm. And we've been having an ongoing one that I think I might bring to the table now, which is really fascinating. We are watching this Woodstock documentary.
Mm-hmm. I haven't
Woodstock
seen it.
Woodstock 99. And if you don't know what the doc is about, of course, you had Woodstock 69 or 67, whatever your Woodstock was. And then they decided, let's do it again 30 years later. How many people came? Like 500,000 or...
One of the ladies said, I haven't seen it. Is that Kristen Bell or his co-host?
That's Monica.
Okay. Their voices are very hard to decipher if you're not a regular listener.
They do a podcast together also, and it's very hard.
It's like when I interviewed the Hood sisters who are twins that talk over each other, like because they share one brain. I put one 60% more in one ear and 60% in the other ear, and some dude with one could only hear in one ear is like, real cool, Bricky, only I got to hear half the episode.
700,000, it's such a scary amount of people. It's insane. So Kristen and I are watching this documentary, and what is unavoidable is it's almost exclusively male. No, that's not true. There's a lot of males there. There's a lot of females there. It's in 99.
60 to 70% white male. Okay.
And everyone's white virtually at this thing.
Yeah.
And the women, so it's at the height of Girls Gone Wild. Do you remember that thing?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
So many girls have their top.
Connie, did you ever buy a Girls Gone Wild VHS or DVD?
I didn't, but man, those commercials would just run one after the other.
Oh, man.
Wow. You got tired of it.
What was their advertising budget? It was insane. Like, those things were around all the time.
Pops off. And so many guys are misbehaving and fucking groping girls. And the whole thing is really disturbing. And there's this collective young male rage happening. And the bands are perfectly complimenting that. And then Limp Bizkit gets on stage and, like, puts the pedal to the metal. And now people start tearing down plywood.
Well,
and they're setting...
Because he started yelling, break shit. Ugh.
Mm-hmm.
And they rip the towers down and they set fire to the stage.
Oh, my God.
And the fire department had to come and it was crazy. But previous artists...
Once again, Limp Bizkit is being mischaracterized because the name of the song is Break Stuff. Fred Durst, who I'm not a fan of, was doing his job. He was doing what he was hired to do, to show up, to play the hit songs. And he was doing his act. Like, so they're mischaracterizing a little bit the Fred Durst part of this, but I get it. And it's how telling stories works.
And also, I don't think that Fred Durst, even if he said, hey guys, be cool, they weren't going to be cool. So it doesn't matter. It was a no-win situation.
Yeah, he was put into a position to fail and has now become the poster boy for everything that went wrong, which, like I said, not a Durst friend, but that is a mischaracterization of him and what his intent was and the liability that everybody's putting on his shoulders that I don't think he's responsible for.
Came out, even like heavy metal people that I didn't listen to.
Yeah, what was the band? They deserve credit. It was the lead singer of, he said, let's let the girls surf on the crowd without all you guys groping. He's like, let's.
Yeah, like he's like.
Offspring is who they're talking about. That's, they played a clip of Offspring. And I'll also say this about the Offspring. When they showed them in modern times, they looked the most different from everybody that they did modern interviews with.
Yeah. They didn't fare well in the future times. But props for saying, yeah, sure, come film us. You know.
Yeah, the offspring didn't spring back, but they were on there and had a nice thing to say about, hey, let's give the girl some respect in the pit, which is something that I had heard years going to punk shows and hardcore shows, like, you know, watch out for the girls, blah 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 blah. Like that. That's, I mean, it's just one of those warning signs that you see. Where it's like, you know, slippery when wet. Well, of course, if I see that the concrete's wet, it's going to be slippery. It's one of those like warning signs that you really regret that you have to read, but I guess somebody somewhere needs to be told it.
Right.
See a girl coming by, don't grab her tit, don't be a dick.
It was a popular band of the time.
Yeah.
Was it Red Hot Chili Peppers?
No,
but they were awesome.
They were awesome, but they didn't help the vibe. Jeez. How come no one was...
Well...
It's really complex, which is why we've been talking about it for 2 days.
Yeah, it's probably led to like 20 debates between Chris and I. Gentle ones, good ones, respectful ones. But I know how it all started. Kristen said, new rule, males just are not allowed to gather in groups.
I said, young males cannot be in groups of five or more. It is just, they can't handle it. Mm-hmm. They cannot handle it. I said, unless, with a caveat, unless there is a clear, and this is what happens in zoo enclosures too, there is a clear alpha who can wrist slap when somebody gets out of order. Big groups of guys scare me.
So she's essentially backing up what I had talked about, is that it's all peer pressure, right? Like, and then you can listen to it in detail, my explanation of positive peer pressure makes positive things happen. And so obviously she's being flashy with her language. She doesn't believe in the segregation of our society by gender and that young men aren't allowed to be together. I mean, she's talking flashy to get her point across, and I get that.
Right, and Dex does point that out, saying, you know, she's not literally saying this. She right. doesn't think it's a thing that we need to do. Just it was a reaction to what she was seeing, like this is what it made her feel.
Yeah.
That she thought might need to happen, but obviously it's not going to. But her point, you know, is they keep saying young boys, this is going to go through what we listen to. They're going to say boys a lot. I don't know, Mark, I saw a lot of men in their 20s at that festival.
I saw that if the U.S. military pulled up a plane and said, we need you guys to go fight a war, they were all eligible. I also saw them holding alcoholic beverages, which you have to be at least 21, which is 3 years past what we deem as an adult in this country. So yeah, they were men. I didn't remember seeing any children in the footage whatsoever. I didn't see very many minorities. I didn't see any children. I saw young white men and young white women at this event.
Yeah, easily probably 18 plus for majority of what I saw. So that's going to come up a few times in this, and some of the arguments are going to be based on this. And, well, let's just listen.
It's like a thing I have.
They're scary, yeah. The groups of guys.
But if you were there, I know that you could grab their attention, regulate, and, like, get everybody to stay in line like ducklings.
Stop grabbing people's ass and
yeah.
Well, thank you for that. I don't know that that's true, but it led to this really bigger, deeper conversation that I think everyone's afraid to have.
Okay.
I don't think any of these things get at the breadth of the problem or a potential solution. So I don't think males can't gather in groups of five as a solution. And Kristen was being facetious, obviously. But here's my point of view, a male point of view, and you guys can attack me afterwards.
Offspring. That's who did it.
Offspring.
Oh my yep. God.
She's over there. That's what Monica does. She's doing that research the whole time.
Offspring. That's your sentence.
God love her. She pulled it out. Yeah.
The one thing that I think I would have a hard time listening to Dax's show is I hate the disclaimer before you make a point. Just make your point. Just fucking say it, dude. This is your audience, your people. That normally means psychologically that you're going into something that you feel is uncharted territory and that people are going to be judging you about, and you're not comfortable with that. Like, just say it. He does that a lot.
As a regular listener, I will say that some of this talk, it seems like therapy talk. They do get into some, you know, issues with people and kind of try to get at the root of things and why yeah. people do something or why they react a certain way. And I do believe that Dax, who is open about being a recovering addict, maybe has done a lot of meetings and a lot of therapy and things. And so I think that language creeps in.
Got it.
And got also it. With his wife living with him, I think this is really, she seems to be a very thoughtful person and really wants to communicate and really wants to understand other people's points of view. I've listened to a lot of her podcasts. So it's there's a lot of therapy talk is the only term I know and also, use for that.
Kristen's been properly media trained to go out and do these junkets and talk about, you know, if you're promoting a film, don't let them suck you into talking about Trump. Just say, well, you know, people do different things. But one of the things I hope that everybody can agree upon is that the movie dropping October 14th is fantastic. Like, she's been trained to do that.
Yeah, how to keep things on target, on topic, and not get away that can get you in trouble.
God. Mm-hmm. I loved The Offspring.
So, if you look at elephants, there are no juvenile male elephants in a family of elephants. They all get kicked out for a few years. They're kicked out. They go roam around, and they're angry, and they attack fucking water buffalo, and they knock trees down, and they have so much testosterone and fervor to procreate that they're dangerous to everyone. So they're literally just kicked out for a few years, and then they return home and they're chill enough to rejoin. That's what happens.
Okay.
And I think there's this,
that cat is just like, where are you going with this? Like,
yeah, it's like we didn't, okay, the elephant Rumspringa. Okay.
But yeah, Dax
has a anthropology degree and maybe something about primates that she mentions. He is, you know, very educated.
Sure.
And sometimes when you're highly educated in an area, you want to, or you start to see everything relate back.
And to his point, I think it often gets forgotten. Humans are animals. We are a species of animals on this planet. We just are way more advanced than second place. So I understand how he's connecting the dots, but I just love that K.
Yeah, you get a lot of clues to maybe what the daily life in the Shepherd Bell home is in this episode.
Yeah, you get a lot of them.
About males that no one wants to talk about, which is we were designed to eventually die defending either in a war or someone raiding our tribe or trying to go toe-to-toe with some animal bigger than us. Our role has been kind of expendable, and we have a lot of chemistry that allows us to go apeshit and just fight with 100 other males against another 100 males to protect. That time is over. It existed for 140,000 years, and it doesn't exist anymore. That skill set of being willing to die to protect somebody is now obsolete.
Mm-hmm.
But our...
I wouldn't say that it's obsolete. I say that that role has evolved, and that there's still primal feelings that you have inside of you, and you feel more primal and stronger feelings when you're younger and your testosterone level is very, very high. But I would say that, like, what he's talking about is true hundreds and hundreds of years ago, but it hasn't been that way in recorded history for, you know, the last 200 years. So it's there's still a bit of that inside of how the male is designed, but I don't, the next part of where he's going with it, it confuses me a little bit. And I saw a puss on your face.
I agree with what you and he are saying, that that is definitely still in the, you know, the genetics. And he does say, you know, it's gone away now. And so what do human males do with that?
Right.
Genetics didn't change in the wake of that. Our biology didn't change in the wake of that. We have all this vestigial wiring. We are still adolescent elephants. And so we're not going to kick all teenage and 20-year-old boys out of society. That's not going to happen. And just to be shouting, in my opinion, socialization is the cure. Socialize them, nurture, nurture, nurture. I also think you're going to butt up against their biology in the same way that we would acknowledge a female's biology and say, females have a menstrual cycle. When they,
all right, I'm going to pause there for a second because that's where we're getting into the trouble zone.
Yeah.
I do think socialization is the answer to this. Also, I mean, where man started at as a primal animal and where he's at now is completely different. And that is slowly, it didn't happen overnight. It's a transition where, you know, every generation that spawned me lost a little bit of this edge. They lost a little step. And then you get me, right, where the whole bloodline ends because I refuse to have any kids. Don't think the planet's got 50 more years in it. But socialization is the best way to curb all of this, because somebody that can't obey by these rules gets kicked out of that social circle, then they are labeled a degenerate, and then they're on their own, and hopefully they have a less pleasurable life isolated, and they don't go as far or make as much of a mess because they've now been kicked out of the circle.
Right. And to your point from the last episode, role models.
Yes.
That's part of socialization, showing a living example of how to be. Role models will, you know, the wiser, older people in your life, the people who have been there, the people who have made these mistakes, the people who have come out of them on the other side, will catch you and say, hey, this is not the road. This is not the way to be. And what you were saying about, you know, the, being cast out as the degenerates, we've all had a friend in our friend groups who did some shit that just was so not cool that everybody kind of wanted to hang out without them. And then they start to feel that. And
yep.
There's a way you can go there. That degenerate friend, you know, for lack of a better word, can recognize and come back and make amends and get back in the group. Or that's the dude you don't see for 40 years.
Right.
And you only see him on Facebook, and they're the same dude or person that you knew that never changed.
And the way that that works, if you think about it from your own life's experience, you're rolling around with a group of friends. You know, maybe it's 10, 20, 30 friends. You're in some sort of a scene, some sort of a vibe. There's somebody who's a little bit shady, gets away with something once. You know, people are, hey man, you can't do that, you know, and then it's like when a new girl or new friend comes in, like, whatever you do, don't listen to Carl, and I'm just making up a name. Carl is just like, he's trouble, stay away. And now that person has a warning because the social circle is protecting its own. That is socialization. So Carl then has to go live in like wherever he lives with the other freaks and junkies and people that are degenerates. And that's just a downward spiral of its own. But the safe circle keeps moving forward because they tried to reason with Carl. Carl couldn't be reasoned with. Therefore, Carl's an outcast. He lives on the island of misfit toys for the rest of his life. Like, that is that tribal nature that we were ingrained with, that we were developed to have inside of us. It still does exist. So you can't give away one part of it without the other part of it. Like, we are animals. We're still doing those things. It's just evolving to the new landscape that we exist in.
Yeah, it's just like when, you know, the thing about a bully, you know, if you let bullies continue to get away with things, they just become more emboldened and more, I mean, we're starting to talk about the last, you know, previous 4 years also with this.
Sure.
You let a bully get away with something, they just, their powers start to grow. They become less worried because they feel more insulated by the fact that they've done it and they've gotten away with it. What can I do next, kind of thing. So it takes those people in that socialization or that friend group to say, hey man, that's not cool. It takes the guy in the group with his other guy friends who sees him doing something rude, crude, or, you know, inappropriate with a woman to say, hey Carl, it's not cool.
Yeah,
you know,
not here, bud.
We don't treat women like that, you know. And then the shame that person will feel within their group hopefully begins something.
And when we look at the next evolution of this, like, grotesque, you know, largely male behavior, when we look at January 6th, those are all Carls. Those are all people that feel rejected by God. There's a really great guy that listens to the show whose name's Carl. I feel bad that I used that name, but those are all people that have felt rejected. You know, they watch the mainstream media, they watch the Hollywood elites, and it doesn't align with their antiquated theories. So that's how you get that group of people that are storming the Capitol, because in their minds, and this may be hard for you to understand, but in their minds, they think that they're saving what America should be from what America's becoming. Whereas the majority of us, the more educated people, the people that understand that equality isn't like a perk, it's how we're supposed to be with each other. So, I mean, you just see this happening over and over again. Smaller scale of your friend group in high school, larger scale of the people that rush the Capitol on the 6th. Like, this is a human nature thing that we're talking about, I guess, is the point that I'm trying to get at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And on whatever level, those people that did that at Woodstock 99, they were lashing out against something.
Yeah.
Was it something inside of them? Was it the, you know, the documentary wants us to think that it's it was the times. It was what was going on with scandals everywhere in the government and the economy and, you know, everything external. I feel like it, a lot of it was internal.
Yeah. Yeah. I also think that at that particular moment at the brink of 2000, that was the moment when you started to see that a college education no longer guaranteed you a shortcut in life. So you're getting your first generation of young people that are starting to read the writing on the wall. I'm probably not going to do as well as my parents did. And so there was a lot of hopelessness, a lot of like lost feelings. The internet was coming online. There were different things happening. People were just already feeling left behind and that they weren't going to get what, quote unquote, they thought that they deserved.
And that they... did they know what they even wanted?
Sure, sure. Everybody goes through those lost years. And I think, you know, it's interesting because it used to be by 18, you were probably already married, settled into a job, had your first kid, and you were rolling at the factory. There's now a thing in the U.S. where it takes you to 28 to kind of figure out who you are and where you're going. Like, it used to be a lost year. It's kind of like a lost decade in your life. Like, most people in their 30s are kind of becoming what their parents had to be in their 20s. We've sort of extended out childhood because we're actually able, due to science, able to live longer. You know, you're getting up to 80, 90 years, where it used to be 60 was the clip where you fell off. So it's all interesting evolutionary shit. Let's hear, though, what Dax's big theory is here. I've rewound it a little bit so we could get the full setup before Connie throws her knockout punch.
Shouting, in my opinion, socialization is the cure. Socialize them, nurture, nurture, nurture. I also think you're going to butt up against their biology in the same way that we would acknowledge a female's biology and say, females have a menstrual cycle. When they have a menstrual cycle, they have hormones for 3 days that are pretty intense. We recognize it. We have a whole industry of products that are trying to alleviate that experience. How are we going to help boys through this other than just going, that's not...
They're fucking men. And Connie, go ahead. You're already shaking your head.
I don't know how, where this, where he formulated this idea that you can relate what happened with those young men at that festival to PMS. It tells me how much he does not understand women and this menstrual cycle and what happens during PMS and the whole rest of women's lives. He's making, I guess they call it a false equivalency there. And it becomes the women at this whole idea of his formulation of this becomes a scapegoat then for the fact that men need to regulate themselves the way that women regulate themselves around hormones and behaviors. And I don't know that what happened with those guys at Woodstock was hormones. And he keeps coming back to hormones. What's your take on that?
Okay. I'm going to get a little interpersonal here to prove a point. Hey friends, I hope you've enjoyed part one of today's episode. I hate to break it in half. I wish you could hear the entire thing, but I also need to run a business and hopefully you'll understand and maybe even choose to support said business by heading over to AID.network, becoming a member of the Circle of Trust, where you unlock the full version of each and every episode, as well as my archive of over 1,400 episodes. I am no celebrity. I am no one rich nor famous. This podcast is made possible by the people that listen to it. You don't hear a ton of ads. You don't hear a ton of bullshit. It's just for the community that supports the content. Thank you so much to everyone in the Circle of Trust. What do you say we get started with part two with Connie Collinsworth over in the COT? Again, there are so many Connie episodes over there for you to check out. If you're enjoying this conversation, part two begins right now at AID.network. I'm going to get a little interpersonal here to prove a point. When I walk down the street and I see a woman's ass in front of me in a pair of Lululemon pants, there is an animal instinct that comes over me inside my mind that goes, oh, whoa. Like, it's just like, oh. Like, it's like this thing in my brain that goes, oh, when I see a beautiful ass walking down the street. It is the same way that when I am given a beautiful cut of meat on a plate at a diner, that I go, oh, God, look at that New York strip. That is the animal inside of me. Never once in my life have I yelled out the window at a young lady. Never once in my life have I used those that hormone in me to go, hey, you got a great ass, random stranger in front of me. So what I'm trying to say is I'm telling you what happens inside my brain, how I am genetically, and something that I can't help. I'm not always proud of this, oh, that goes through my mind. But I am telling you that I have learned to never react upon that. I don't grab the butt. I don't say anything about the butt. I don't even try to make eye contact with it. I look over and go, whoa, look at that. We have a winner. And I keep going on about my business. That does not become a complete breakdown of me. What he is doing now, which I think is dangerous, he's calling them boys, which already is giving them a level of innocence because they weren't old enough to know better. They're not men. And he's saying, well, hey, chicks have their period where they're untrustworthy, and you know they can't control themselves. What these guys were going through at Woodstock was a hormonal thing. I don't know, man. I'm not buying that. I'm not buying that at all because my hormones have never made me grope or reach out or to pull on somebody or to force my way in on somebody. My hormones have never done that. And I'm going to say for 95% of the audience, they could say the same.
Yeah, your hormones also never caused you to break down fences, set fires, destroy porta potties.
I've done some of those things. I'm not totally innocent in that regard. I did break a lot of stuff when I was younger and wild. So I will tell my own guilt there.
But the specific storm of things that I feel come together in adolescence like that leads to that,
yeah,
isn't just your hormones. It's a whole bunch of things.
Yes.
To stick to the PMS thing,
break it down.
Yeah, I have never once with PMS, you know, and I'm 52 now, so these things are going away from me.
Congratulations.
I've never been in a position from PMS to do anything other than be a little bitchy. Tell people to get the fuck away from me and leave me alone. Tell people what I think about them. You know, like just it alters your personality a little bit for a short period of time, and you know what it is. You can name it. You can say, oh, okay, this thing is happening, and other women know it about other women.
Yeah.
But why do men not see these things happening in them and say in their group and say, okay, this is your genetics, this is your hormone, because it's such a complicated thing. It's so much more complicated than just equating it to PMS in women.
Yeah.
I don't know what it could be compared to, you know, if you're comparing what happens when these men get together at Woodstock 99 and do these things, and predominantly men. We didn't see any women. Maybe there were some women involved. I don't understand the comparison to PMS, to the menstrual cycle, to a thing that happens to women once a month. You know, we're going to get into a conversation with them in their podcast where he starts to say women have things that help with this. There isn't anything to help men.
Well, I think what he's doing is a liberal, educated guy, elite guy version of whataboutism. Obviously, I feel like he took some sort of shrapnel here on everybody saying that men ruined Woodstock. And he's seeing like, well, that's my team. Everybody's talking bad about my team. And one thing, if I learned anything over the last couple of years, is that when people speak bad about white men, young white men in general, white people in general, they're not speaking about me. They're speaking about the group that I belong to, but not me as an individual. Just like I'm sure lots of black people have had to learn, like when people say derogatory things about, well, you know, black people do this and black people do that, they probably just go, yeah, some do, but I'm not in that category. You know what I mean? Like I have had to learn this characteristic that when I watch something like this, I'm not offended. In fact, I'm offended by the behavior of people that look like me, but it sounds like he's doing a whataboutism. Was like, well, you know, women aren't perfect either. And in this situation, I'm sure there were a couple of ladies that got into a fight, and you know, nobody's ever truly innocent, But statistically, you would see that what happened with Woodstock was 100% a young white male problem. And that is what happened. So to feel like I didn't feel any like, well, they should be easier on the young white guys. I was one once like, these guys are assholes. These guys are not my friends.
Yeah, I got the feeling that his gruff got up and he got attacked because he's part of that group, as you're saying, that is being blamed for this.
Yeah.
And Kristen was simply reacting. Her gut emotional was, this scares me.
Right. This and he takes that personal.
Right. And so we should probably play a little forward because they're going to get more into what we've already talked about.
How you should behave. I also think there has to be some component where we acknowledge the severity of the biology that's happening. I know this is a very dicey conversation.
I have so many things to say on this. Okay. The male adolescent elevator.